So he just got out of architecture school, and he, you know, is basically looking for a job, which is very, very difficult in that field.
Yeah, especially in this economy, I would imagine. It'd be really tough.
Yeah. And so he's in Vermont, and Rick is in New York City now, but he's an interpreter for the deaf, and he works at a school in New York City called the Lexington School for the Deaf, which is kind of a famous school for the deaf. And he doesn't really like doing it anymore. He's been doing it for a lot of years, and I think it's pretty, I think he's maybe burnt out, that might be the right word. It's maybe a little bit tedious.
All the talent and stuff that you do, after a while it becomes rote or something.
Yeah.
You hit a limit where you can. I guess we really were talking more about junior high than high school, and we don't have to cover this year by year or anything, but does Deal even have a high school? I mean, was it, again, rather, I don't want to use the word isolated, I apologize, but, you know, small situation. I mean, I take it Deal Elementary School didn't have that many students, and it was a small classroom size sort of situation. Is the high school like that too, or?
No, the high school was Asbury Park. Regional, yeah. We went to Asbury Park High School.
Was that a real adjustment for you, or?
It was really a lot different, but and I might have been a little bit scared going to Asbury Park High School, but.
Especially, I guess, as you were saying, the riots really were happening when you were in high school, right? Is that, I mean...
Yeah, it was towards the end of high school that the real riots occurred. I don't know, I really wanted to go there. My parents put my brother at CBA for 1 year, Christian Brothers Academy, just as a react, because it was said that Asbury Park High School wasn't a really great place to go to, that academically wasn't very good, and if you were college-bound, you wouldn't be able to do what you wanted to do, and maybe there was some element of that was kind of dangerous there, and so on. But he only went to CBA for 1 year, and then he just insisted that he didn't want to go there anymore. We all wanted, for whatever reason, we all wanted to go to Asbury Park High School. I don't know if we craved to, you know, expand our horizons or what. It seemed that, my memory of it seemed that way to me, although I can't, it seems hard to believe that as an eighth grader I wanted to expand my horizons.
What about friends? I mean, weren't all your friends, or most of them, going to end up there anyway?
Yeah, that's true. They were going to all go there, so that probably was the
biggest. Or did a lot of kids go on to, like, a private high school, or?
Not really. You would think that it would be that way in that kind of a community, but it wasn't really that way. A few did. A few did, but most of us went to Asbury High School. And Asbury High School was, you know, it should have been a total culture shock for me, but I don't really remember it that way. I was scared. I don't want to say I wasn't scared going there initially, but I accepted the culture shock as a really, really interesting, you know, fun or whatever thing. You know, it was 50% black, so we were being exposed to kids who were black, which for me was a new experience.
Mm-hmm.
It was like 5% college bound, which is incredibly low.
Mm-hmm.
So the college bound ones were all together in certain classes. But not all classes. You know, gym was, you know, we weren't together for gym. We weren't together for languages. We weren't together for homeroom or study hall or some of the other elective things that we might have taken. But we did spend a lot of time together in math and science and so on. But being there was, you know, every day was this incredible challenge of mixing with the people that were there.
Mm-hmm. Was there a lot of mixing? Was it really pretty much, as you said, you know, you were in a classroom with a lot of other people who were college bound, and I'm not making a distinction that the college bound people were, you know, were exclusively white or anything like that, or that was the only kind of difference or distinction to be made was between students of color and white students. But was there only 5%? I almost get the sense you're talking about it being in a minority yourself in a different way. And I'm wondering if you had much exposure to, or you mixed with, for instance, a lot of students who weren't going to college.
No, we did. We mixed up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at least I did. I needed some of my friends who were on sports teams. Well, I was in sports as well. I swam, but the swimming team wasn't as mixed up, I don't think, as some of the other teams. But my friends, some of my friends were on the basketball team, football team, and so maybe through them I met a lot of people that I might not have met otherwise. But there, we spent a lot of time with people that weren't in the College Bound group. And I don't know, that part of it was really, really good. It was really great for me. It seemed like it was a challenge all the time.
I was wondering if you maybe could, you know, how do you mean that?
I mean, it was a challenge in the sense that, you know, like a black, there was this one particular black guy, I can't remember his name right now, I might think of that later.
For some pull out that college yearbook when you...
He'd always bug me. Now, tell me really, don't you have a black maid in your house, don't you? He'd always ask me if I had a black maid. I remember him really well. But he really liked me. He liked eating lunch with me. He was a kind of a cool kid, too. I mean, but for some reason, he was as curious about me as I might have been about him. And we sort of spent a lot of time together. We actually ate lunch together a whole lot. And things like that happened all the time. You know, every day. And it wasn't comfortable. It wasn't like we were comfortable every day. In fact, we were uncomfortable every day because the socialization that was going on and the fights and all the things that go on every day weren't comfortable. But for me, it really was sort of exciting. I don't know if exciting is not really the right word, but it was very stimulating. And I had a tremendous amount of curiosity about it. I had a tremendous amount of curiosity about how can all of us be friends, and how can this all just work out, and how can we all just be happy? Because I don't just want to hang around with rich white Jewish kids. And I don't know, it worked out. It was fun.
How large was the student body at the high school? Do you have any? We're talking 2,000 or 200.
I think there were about 1,600 in the school, 400 per class. It wasn't a huge high school.
It's just Deal and Asbury Park, or was it also
no,
a few other communities? Yeah,
Raleigh Beach, okay. Belmar. There were quite a few towns that went there.
Smaller beach towns, I guess.
Yeah.
And Asbury Park's really not that, I guess, that big of a town, really. Yeah. Maybe for the area, but just...
Yeah.
I'm wondering if... Perhaps it's not fair to ask you to compare the situation then to now or something like that, but... Since the riots were, as you said, probably 70, 71 in Asbury Park, do you have an understanding of why things might have been so tense at that particular point in Asbury Park, I mean in Newark as well, or how you responded to that, or what your feelings were about not only being in this, I mean, I assume, you know, I didn't grow up that close to Asbury Park, but I know the area somewhat, and you know that in the later 70s, when I was in high school, that there wasn't the situation there. Or the kind of tension that, you know, you're describing, I think, at a place like Asbury Park High School, or I'm trying to think of some of the other high schools in the area that might have had a more mixed population, like the one I went to. And I'm just wondering if you knew why, or had a sense of...
Well, there was a big black community. It was centered around a street called Springwood Avenue, mm-hmm. which actually was listed as, you know, one of the most dangerous streets to be on. Or one of the 10 mm-hmm. most dangerous streets to be on the United States, or something like that, at one point. So the conditions were pretty bad. The housing, the economic conditions mm-hmm. were really, really bad. And maybe what would be a small area if you compare it to Newark or New York, but nevertheless, the conditions were like the ones that you would see in Newark and New York, and that the people lived in mm-hmm. crummy housing and didn't have the things that they needed. And even though it was a smaller thing, the results were pretty much the same.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for Central Jersey, that really, you know, in a sense was the... But I'm thinking of Red Bank and, you know, other situations where, I think there was a more... where there wasn't later, let's say 6-7 years later, the kind of real tension.
It was better. It was 6-7 years later, it was less in Asbury Park, but I don't know why it cracked there more so. I guess it was just more... There was a bigger mass of people for it to happen to. And maybe it was broken up more in some of the other towns. But the black people lived in a very, very, very well-defined area on the west side of the railroad tracks. And, you know.
Do you remember, did you stay home from school during the riots? I mean,
School was shut down for days, and then police were all in the school after that. During the riots itself, which happened, I think they started sort of in the afternoon on one particular day, and it might have been a weekend day, because I don't remember. It wasn't like we were evacuated from the school for it. We just, I mean, from Deal, we just saw smoke and, you know, smoke rising from Asbury Park, and we had, you know, we were really, really scared. I mean, as far as we know, we thought some angry mob was going to come over and destroy Deal just because we were wealthy, you know. Nothing like that ever happened. I mean, that's not what happens in the riots, but basically they just burnt down their own. Springwood Avenue was burnt down. Springwood Avenue did not exist after that. There were no buildings on Springwood Avenue. It all went up in smoke, and I don't know, we didn't really understand it very well.
But you went back to school eventually, I mean, a couple of weeks?
Yeah,
or
a couple of days later.
Did it, you know, did it influence you, do you think, in any way? I mean, has it got some, had some lasting effect or some... I guess maybe who knows, I'm pursuing these questions because I just went through some riots myself, and again, not that far away, but not that close, and I'm curious for my own reaction now a couple of months later, so maybe I'm just really asking these questions as I think of them for myself, but...
I wouldn't call it a key thing. It was part of all of
growing up,
the whole issue of, you know, here I'm, you know, I'm fairly well off, and here's other people that aren't very well off, but I'm getting to know them in school, and I really like them, you know. They're, you know, and so, you know, they're, I'm sure that that formed part of, you know, my ability to sort of care about other people. I never really knew what to do about it, but, you know, I'm sure it affects the way I think about it.
Well, if you figure it out, you should run and tell somebody, because I don't know that many of us have figured it out yet either. It's still going on. I don't know if there are other things you want to, we're talking about your adolescence, and I guess for every person, adolescence is a trying as well as a exhilarating time, and I never really quite know how to ask to pursue people. Do they want to talk about dating or not dating, as the case may be, or, you know, what did you do for fun, or do you want to just move on to other things?
I don't know what's important for the process.
I think it matters to the person. I mean, I'm curious as to what might be your social life in a place like, you know, Deal and Asbury Park in the late 60s, early 70s, and just in a general way, you know, part of growing up in America or something like that. But if you're not particularly interested in person, we can move on.
It wasn't that interesting. I mean, I had a group of friends, and we did a lot of, you know, we spent a lot of time together and did a lot of things together, some of which involved a lot of water activity. I was particularly into swimming and surfing. And we would do that for as much of the year as possible, even in the dead of winter. We'd put on wetsuits and go surfing before school and things like that. Surfing ruled. We just thought that was the most incredible thing that a person could possibly do. It was just you. I wouldn't call it exactly a natural thing, because you had to have a surfboard.
Right.
But sitting out on the surfboard in the water at 6 o'clock in the morning when the sun's rising, with, you know, usually with somebody else, and talking and sitting on the surfboard waiting for a wave to come and talking to the other person. It was a really, really great, great activity, great thing.
You can't surf on Lake Michigan, huh?
No, you can't. People do surf.
Or real surf?
People real surf. When there's enough wind and then you get enough waves. It's mostly, I think, down at the south end you can do
right
it.
Right here?
Not in Chicago. You have to drive down to Indiana. Or
okay. I thought you meant the south side of Chicago.
Probably because of the fact that I wasn't very good at other kinds of sports. But this was more balance, and not nearly so much in terms of strength. And I guess I had the balance. I was able to do it anyway. And so for me, it was a sport that I could identify with. And I just couldn't stop doing it. I mean, I want to do it right now.
Really? You just jump. Do you? I mean, when was the last time you went surfing?
Not for a couple of years.
Yeah, I must say, it must be hard here in the middle of the country to find it as convenient as perhaps even when you were in Philadelphia or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, one time I was in California visiting my brother when he lived there, and I went surfing. And occasionally when I've gone home, but not very much recently. I, you know, find a surfboard and go surfing. It's hard because it's illegal. I mean, it's basically illegal. You have to do it in a, you know, a place that's approved for it, and there's got to be a lifeguard and all this stuff. But I would never do it then. I would do it like in October, you know, and then the police would come and they'd kick you out and all that stuff. And that happened a lot. So it's, I basically haven't been doing it very much anymore. It's hard to get, you know, it was easy. We didn't care about getting arrested when we were 17 years old because they never really arrested you. But they, now we care about it. But it, it was, it's a major thing. I think about surfing all the time.
Well, maybe you'll be able to find more time to do it or end up moving somewhere where you can or go down to Indiana, I suppose, when the wind is right or something like that. I guess the swim team was a competitive thing. I mean,
yeah.
The swim team was part of the high school.
Yeah.
Year-round, just part of a season like football? And
yeah, it was
and
winter sport.
Were you guys a really good team?
No, we were a really bad team. We always lost. I think my senior year when I was captain, I think we might have lost every single meet. As a team, we were really bad. Individually, I did win, reasonably often. But I was never really great. I made it to the state meet as an alternate. That was the peak of my career. So I wasn't even at the sort of state level. But I don't know, it was just another thing. I just really liked it a lot. And it was a team, and it was something that I, to a certain extent, you know, I excelled at. At least people looked at me with hope that I would, at least we'd get some points, you know. And so that was pretty neat.
I was on a swim team once that lost a lot too, so I have a feeling of how you feel. But I loved swimming, so it was fun. The practice was the best for me. I enjoyed the hours and hours of just swimming. The meets I didn't like. You just were in there and out in 2 seconds, and you had to sit there and wait. But when you practice 4 days a week and just 2-3 hours, I felt good when I was done.
Yeah.
Exhausted, but good.
Yeah, definitely.
What about social things? I mean, again, without asking you the sort of details of your adolescent sex life or something like that, but, did you go to the movies, dates?
I was kind of shy, but I had a few different girlfriends over high school, in the high school years, for short periods of time,
mm-hmm.
and went on dates and went to a lot of parties and things like that. But I was kind of shy. I definitely would be considered to have been really shy. I wasn't a wild and crazy guy. We did a lot of things as a group.
Now perhaps that's also something I need to, maybe explore a little bit further. Who makes up this group? I know we're still talking about maybe your brothers, or are we talking actually friends who we don't know much about yet? We meaning the people.
We did have a group of friends, and actually, I have to admit, I mean, most of the really close friends that I spent a lot of time with did live in Deal. I mean, even though we spent a lot of time mm-hmm. with other people that, at school. The amount of time outside of school that we spent with them was somewhat limited. First of all, they didn't live anywhere near us. Pretty much I hung around, on the weekends with people that lived nearby. And there were, a few really critical, really close friends.
Are you still close to any of them? Are you still friends with some people from high school? Or all of them even?
Well, we kind of keep up on, where each other is, but basically through my parents, or through our parents, they bump into people at different times, but I hardly bump into anybody. There's one guy named Jay Greenspan who I've kept up with. He was a really close friend. And there was another guy who really was our other very close friend, whose name was Steve Etikin, but he died when I was in Minnesota, so that was between 1982 and 1985. But the three of us spent a lot of time together when we were young. And again, Steve died, but I do keep up with Jay a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Come in.
Oh, hi, sorry. I was just going to make sure the door was...
Okay.
I don't know what to say about them. I mean, they were very important to me, and I keep up with them to a certain extent.
again, maybe this is just more my own personal experience, but I always got the sense that I'm coming along really 4 or 5 years later, you know, being husband, I missed something about politics and maybe some awareness on the part of teenagers of something wider than their neighborhood or their, you know, the town, that I didn't feel I had, you know, as when I was in high school, that the 60s were over because it was 1974, 5 and whatnot. And I was wondering if, you know, there was, you know, you had more of an awareness or you were involved in any of the political issues at the time. I mean, although we're talking now really, I guess you graduated in 71, you said? Oh,
yeah.
The civil rights movement, I mean, was still, I mean, I think of 68 as a kind of a watershed, but just so many different things I remember as you know, again, being a much younger kid and not really participating in that sense, but that other people were. I'm wondering if you have, you know, what you thought about what was going on at the time, and Nixon, and I mean, just the list goes on and on and on.
Well, we were basically, I mean, I was in the anti-Vietnam War movement. You know, we went to marches, and we had like one demonstration directly at Asbury Park High School related to that. But we went to New York for the huge, huge, gigantic, you know, marches that would occur every once in a while. And we would do, you know, meet my friends and I. We had long hair, and we'd wear peace. We wore peace symbols. We took an American flag and we painted directly on the flag with black paint a peace sign, and we carried that to New York City, and we thought we were going to get arrested because it's illegal to deface the flag, and we were pretty sure we were going to get arrested, and we cared, but we decided to do it anyway. So I was involved in that.
I can't remember what in the draft, whether you would have been eligible for it or not. I
registered for the draft in late in the high school. I guess when I was 18.
I think it's people were born in 53 or 50. I don't remember. There was a point where that.
Yeah, and then when I was a freshman in college, then I was in the lottery, and my number was in the 300s, and I never got there.
Or really, really high. Sorry, can you hit turn around? Sorry again. I was one of those 10 years in between where not even registration was required, and with my brothers.
Yeah,
I remember. Younger, had to register, and
I didn't want to register. But I decided to go register. I remember going to register. I didn't do anything major. As soon as I got my draft card, I ripped it up, which is illegal, as far as I know. Yeah. And I pasted it on a piece of paper so that the pieces were sort of fit together, and I framed it, and I put it on the wall.
What did your parents think about that? Or did they just not?
they didn't say too much about it. I'm sure they weren't thrilled about it, but they weren't... I don't know, I think they were anti-Vietnam War, too.
Many, many, many people were. And not just, you know, you didn't have to be between the ages of 15 and 21 to feel that way. Although I think perhaps with the kind of youth movement or, you know, a lot of other things that were happening at the time, people tend to look back on it as that. But you wouldn't, I guess, you say you went to demonstrations, and you know, you certainly had, were you an organizer in any way of any of that, or were you just more a participant? Or?
Yeah, I was just a participant. I felt like I really wanted to do stuff. But I don't know, I just followed along.
Yeah. I guess really where we should continue on, unless you feel that there's something more you want to discuss about, you know, high school, we should kind of move on to your decision to go to Penn or non-decision. You said your father went to Penn earlier, so I assume that may have had something to do with it, or, you know.
It had a lot to do with it. I didn't want to go there because I wanted to go to a school in the country. Going to the city seemed ridiculous.
Yeah.
Why would anyone want to live in the city? I didn't want to live in the city. So almost everywhere that I applied were in the country. I remember applying to a fair number of colleges.
Not like, could you get the...
Well, Rutger, Rutgers was like my safe school.
Wasn't it everybody through the future?
And Penn,
or your mom made you. My mom made me, I think. This is what I went.
And I applied to Penn as well because I thought, well, and it's partly a safe school because maybe because my, because at the time it made a difference whether your parents went there, and so and my father had gone to dental school there, so I decided that I would apply there. But I didn't want to go there. I figured, well, that would just be if everything else fell through. Well, everything else fell through. I didn't get into any schools at all except for Rutgers and Penn. And I decided, well, I really don't want to live in the city. This is at the time. Now I'm glad I did it, of course, but in the city, I said, well, I'll go to Rutgers, but Rutgers isn't very, it's a good school. It was a good school, but it wasn't as great as Penn, so I ended up deciding to go to Penn.
Do you know why the others fell through? Do you think you were just shooting for the stars? I mean, you crapped out on your SATs. Do you know why?
No, I had good SATs.
You think it was the
I was in the top five of the class in the high school.
You think it was the high school or the fact that so few people were college bound? Or
I don't know. I think I was just unlucky. As far as I think I was very, very lucky actually because Penn was fantastic. But as far as getting into those specific schools that I thought I wanted to go to. I just think I was unlucky because on paper I looked fine. I mean, I had the numbers, and I really don't know why. Maybe I didn't. Maybe I wasn't very impressive in an interview. I don't really know what it took to get into college in those days. But I think it was just maybe unlucky.
And I'm not, aware of what the ins and outs or
I don't know
the requirements beyond the the typical standard ones that I, of course. Were the same when I was going to school or applying to school, I'm sure. So you went to Penn, and you're glad you went there now. Were you glad you went there after you got there as well, or?
Well, there's one thing we didn't talk about that's incredibly important.
Okay, I'm so sorry.
No, I just thought of it. That is that one of the really major things that happened to me, which spanned high school to college, was that I worked in the summer at a camp for a handicapped kid.
Right.
And that camp was called Camp Oakhurst. And it was very close to where I grew up.
Wasn't it in Oakhurst?
Yeah.
I'm so bright, aren't I? I thought Oakhurst was farther north, though. Okay.
Not much. Just a little bit. And it was a sleepover type camp for kids from New York City that had physical handicaps. And at first I volunteered there. And after volunteering there for a couple of weeks, one of the counselors, I think I was too young to be a counselor, so I volunteered. And after I was there for a few weeks, one of the counselors left or quit, and they really needed a counselor, and they asked me to be a counselor even though I wasn't old enough. And so I started being a counselor there, and I ended up staying there for every summer for 4 or 5 years as a counselor. So it was late high school, all through college, and then actually even into med school, I went there every summer. And that was truly a very major experience for me. It really most of it took place in college now that I think about it, but it started in high school. I think the requirement must have been that you had to be in college.
I see.
And I was in high school, so but they took me anyway because they were desperate, and I stayed on there. That was just an incredible, amazing experience.
I don't know if I can get it in here. No, there it is. I was going to say,
is it in there?
It is, but it's in the place where I don't really know where to put it.
Okay.
So it's kind of in between college and high school. It spanned
high school, college, and medical school, now that I think about it.
No, you said you... let me see if I can get this right. I'm sorry. You volunteered because you couldn't work, but you wanted to... I mean, I'm trying to get a sense of why you volunteered there originally, I guess. Is that...
Well, even then, I had some idea that I was interested in the medical field. This boy that died, Steve Etikin's father, was a surgeon, and I always thought he was really neat. And I just thought he was an incredible person. He was good with us. He sort of knew how to talk to us, and he respected us or whatever. And I just thought he was a neat person. And he also was a surgeon. And so he was sort of a role model for me in that sense. And he took us to the hospital once to observe some surgery, which I'm not sure was the best idea. I actually fainted during the surgery. But that didn't deter me at all. And in addition, at the same similar time, we joined. I had been in the Boy Scouts, and I joined an Explorers scouting troop that was based at a hospital, because the Explorers troops tended to be focused on one issue. Like, it might be a mountain climbing Explorer troop, or it might be a hospital Explorer troop, or it might be something else, and or it might be a radio broadcasting station Explorers troop, or we were a hospital. And so, you know, we did some volunteer work in the hospital and observed some things in the hospital. That was probably my first medical experience. Why I decided to go to Camp Oakhurst, well, it was slightly medical. The kids were physically handicapped. But also one of my neighbors had been a counselor there. And she talked it up. And I decided just to try it. I decided to be a volunteer there.
And that was the way to become a counselor, right?
Yeah.
And it turned out it just happened a little bit more quickly for you because it needed you.
Yeah.
What was she talking up about? I guess maybe I can ask the two questions together. And why this kind of Explorers Club associated with the hospital? Again, already because of somebody like
Dr. Etikin might have been part of it. You know, he worked at that hospital. This was a way that I could go get into the hospital and see things in the hospital that I was curious about, and to see what kind of a place he worked in. My father also, as a dentist, was on staff at that hospital and did work in a clinic in the hospital once a week. And so, you know, the hospital was close to the family. And this Explorers troop was available. And Steve Etikin and myself both joined the troop together.
Was Steve also going to be a doctor, or, again, maybe
no.
Interested in telling him just...
No, he
was interested in being a Boy Scout or an Explorer.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Dr. Etikin actually got us into it. He was probably the one that told us about it.
Mm-hmm. He was like a real kind of, you know, substitute or second father, or the role model that's not your father that you kind of talk to. Things like that. And I guess a lot of us have that, you know. You can't always talk to your dad, so there's your friend's dad down the street, or a teacher at school, or somebody. Okay. Do you have any contact with him still, or does he know?
I did. I saw him a couple of years ago. Uh-huh. It was at my parents' 40th wedding anniversary. Uh-huh. Party. We made a party for my parents, and he was there. And I talked to him there, and we started crying and everything.
It's also because of Steve, perhaps, or
because of Steve, yeah. Yeah.
I think it would be another reason. Well, you know, there can be the emotional ties also that are just other than death that can bring people to express themselves that way. I guess I'd like to cover more of the Camp Oakhurst before maybe we go back to Philly, if you'd like. Your neighbor talked it up. What is it that she talked up and made you say, "Oh, this is a good summer job or a good experience"? Or
I don't remember what she said. She probably didn't say very much because she's somebody that I also admired a whole lot. She was the older sister of a friend of mine that lived down the street, and I admired her a lot. But, you know, she was just another person that paid attention to us and didn't treat us badly or anything. And I thought she was a neat person. So I don't know what she said at the time that made me start the volunteering. I probably didn't have anything much else to do. I might not have had a good job that summer, I guess. And so I just decided to try it. You know, and I immediately liked it because it was a camp with a lot of kids in it that really needed a lot of attention, wanted a lot of attention. And so I, you know, was immediately drawn right in by the kids because they needed a lot of help. And the more people there to help them, the better.
Now, these weren't kids whose families were paying for this camp out of their own pockets, right? You said they were from New York City, so I guess I got the just impression that...
Yeah, maybe like 10% of the camp, the parents had money to pay. I mean, there was a fee, but almost nobody had to pay that fee because it was all supported by a group called the New York Service for the Handicapped. And the New York Service for the Handicapped received huge donations from, I think, something called the Jewish Federations. It's still
it's
a big
Jewish
charity. Yeah,
no,
something like that.
It's a couple, but I think it's an umbrella group for a lot of different.
Yeah,
it's United Way, but it's
at camp. We always had the Federation. We always talked about it as the Federation, which was really the people that we depended on for giving money to the New York Service for the Handicapped, which in turn ran the camp. But almost nobody paid.
What can you maybe give? Sort of what was it like? Even a kind of physical description.
Well, the camp was. It wouldn't be what you'd call a really beautiful camp in Maine. It didn't have big forests or anything like that. But for these kids, it was like going to the Rocky Mountains and taking a tour through the Grand Canyon. It really was like that for them, for the little ones. But it was a really basic campgrounds that had some trees, had these wooden structure bunks, and had a small like forest or woodsy area that you could take walks into and maybe build a fire or do something back there. And there's a pool, and there was an art room, and there was an activity room, and there was a theater for plays, all kinds of activities, and there was a gigantic mess hall. So it was a really very basic, simple camp area. And of course it was all geared for the handicapped with ramps and all the things that you would need as far as that goes. And we had a bus where you could put wheelchairs on the bus and things like that. But it was, you walk in there and the types of things, all the kids had something wrong with them, but the kids were all very, very different. I mean, there were some kids that had no legs, and there were some kids that were spastic, and there were some kids that could just sit there like lumps because they were had muscular dystrophy. There were kids with other diseases that where their handicaps were secondary, like kids with hemophilia who had problems with their joints because they had bleeding into their joints over the years, and their joints didn't work very well. So there were, just all kinds of kids there. There were kids that were handicapped, but they were also retarded. So there were kids that were retarded there. It was just this incredible array.
I was going to say, kind of a catch-all. If you were in New York City and perhaps needed a situation where your child could, get away from the city for a while, was it the whole summer they went down there? Was it
there were 2 weeks
shifts?
They were called trips. They were called 2-week trips. Some kids got to stay for just one trip, and some kids got to stay for 2 trips, which would be 4 weeks.
And so they probably went through 3-4 week periods, too?
At least, no.
I mean, the people who would work there. Yeah,
I think
there
were about 4 trips, yeah.
Oh, okay.
About 4 trips, yeah. And at the end of every trip, there would be a banquet night where everybody went home. And at the end of every trip was this incredible emotional experience, because even just in the 2-week period was this intense experience for kids and counselors alike, where the kids got to trust the counselors and the counselors got attached to these kids. And part of it was because they were really deprived in their homes in New York. They didn't get a lot of attention. People didn't care about them. They didn't get out much. And for us, we just responded to that. I mean, because we were able to give them these things, we just, just felt. So at the end of every trip, it was this emotional thing, because neither one of us wanted to. We didn't want them to go back to New York City. They didn't want to go back to New York City. So it turned into an all-year-round thing for me. We used to go to New York. Many of the counselors were from New York. I was one of the few people that was local.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the counselors were recruited by the camp in New York, because that's where the organization is. But there were a few people that were local, like myself. But I would go into New York, and we'd see the kids all year round. In fact, there was a program which I couldn't participate in, because they never actually lived close enough to New York, where the counselors would have assigned to them a kid. It was like a big brother, big sister type program. And that would go on throughout the year. There was always a Christmas party. There were a bunch of kids that didn't live in homes, but they lived in an institution in New York City called the Bird S. Kohler Hospital, which is on what used to be called Welfare Island, but now it's called Roosevelt Island?
Yeah, I think that's more.
Yeah. And so we used to go to that hospital and visit the kids that lived in the hospital. And, this is like out of the, Geraldo Rivera exposure era. This is like a horrible place. And it was real. It was real, and going to see it was just unbelievable. And so I would go there as much. I don't know how many times I went to Bird S. Kohler Hospital. I've been there
on like a weekend, or just drive up for the night from.
Yeah, I mean, I know the
deal or
yeah.
Philly.
I had to take the No. 7 subway across to Queens, then I had to take a bus which went some other weird route and then went over this tiny little bridge onto the island and dropped me off at the hospital. And because there were these kids there that just you know, really enjoyed seeing people.
Basically abandoned by families, yeah. You think, and that's why they were,
or some were definitely abandoned. We always, at the beginning of each trip, we'd get, the social worker would give us a synopsis about each kid, what their medical needs were, if they had any, but also what their background was. And every single one of them had this social history that was, you know, hideous.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really a dramatic experience.
What was the age group of the kids who were coming to, I mean,
they were from five, they're all school ages, basically from kindergarten through the end of high school. And I always took care of the youngest. I was always with the 5 year olds. My bunk, when I became a counselor, I was in the 5 year old bunk, and I stayed in that bunk throughout.
And when you say you continued this, you know, into college, and you said even into grad school, you mean you went back and you were a counselor for the summer?
Yeah.
Okay. At the same, whatever lousy pay rate, but I'm sure they were paying counselors. You weren't in it, starting to go into some sort of administrative position, or, I mean, I'm sure maybe you were head honcho or something when you were.
The summer after med school, I wasn't a counselor. I was I worked in the infirmary.
Okay. And then you didn't continue that anymore after that.
And I had another job as well. Actually, I worked in a hospital too that was nearby.
Okay.
So I worked in the infirmary during the day. And there were a lot of kids that needed enemas because they couldn't have bowel movements otherwise. And so I administered the enemas.
That's a great summer job.
And it was actually it was a lot of fun though. You know,
you could talk to them.
This is like a club. We turned it into a club. It wasn't medical at all. Yeah. It was a club.
Did it have a name?
It did have a name. I wasn't going to tell you. It's too weird. Never mind. Let's get back on that.
Leave it for people.
But we did. We had a club. The kids felt they were in part of a club. And while their enemas were, you know, going into them, we would be doing things and we'd have activities and we'd do stuff. And so that was fun too.
We're coming to the end of the day, so we'll end there.
Okay.
And pick up with Penn on the next one.